Yes, it is. Happy Thursday. My gosh, we're already to Thursday. Next week, the 4th of July. Oh my gosh, we get there, I'm telling you. Even with the rain today, we get to these warmer months. We get to these J months, and they fly by. So hopefully you're enjoying as you can. It is great to be with you. So much that I want to cover today, but I want to start where we've been the last 2 days, because more is coming out, and more is being exposed. And, you know, I ask this question a lot when talking about, especially Democratic socialists. I don't understand why anyone who's not in government would want a bigger government. Like, that to me doesn't make any sense. Why would you want the government to have more control of your day-to-day? I don't want anyone to have control of my day-to-day. Let me rise and fall with my decisions. I don't want anyone to have control of my day. And you have people that are begging the government to control them, to have more control over their everyday life, be it, you know, their job, the programs they use, their money. There are people that are just willing to give the government ultimate power. I mean, to me, and this is coming from someone who barely was able to graduate on time in high school, okay? But that sounds like people who didn't pay attention in school. Like, to me, that sounds like someone who doesn't know the history of socialism. No one who goes and casts a ballot, except for government officials, like the tax-paying average Joe, does not benefit from socialism. It's the elected official, or the government official. The government official benefits from socialism. And I just don't understand. And this is a push where it's millennials, it's Gen Zers. There's even some Gen Xers in there. The 90s on, right? The kids that were in high school starting in the 90s on seem to be the ones that are pushing this socialism. Oh, and Bernie Sanders, who's 84 years old. They're pushing this socialism. And I just want to ask, what do you hope to gain? Like, why do you think socialism will work this time? Have you gone down to Miami and talked to the people who have fled socialism, communism? Have you talked to those individuals? Why they risked their life to flee that type of government? You want to ruin what we have built over 250 years? And yeah, we made mistakes along the way. We're not perfect. But socialism, you believe, is the answer? You believe that's where America needs to go? And, you know, you would think, well, it's because everything's so expensive. But you look at the people, you go back to the New York City mayoral election. The people who voted for Mamdani were rich, white, college-educated people. That's who voted for Mamdani. That's the socialist movement. The person that's on social media talking about their vacation, right? We were at Sandals this weekend. Now I've had that person. They're at a Mamdani rally. It's not the middle class. It's not the lower class. That's not the people funding these campaigns. It's rich, white, college educated people that are funding the socialism movement. It goes back to something I've always said. It's what I say about Poland cars. It's what I say about Zellner. It's these people that, hey, I know what's best for you. I know what's best for you. You're struggling. I know what's best for you. Kathy Hochul, who I guarantee does not have the same shopping routine I have and hasn't my entire lifetime, okay? But she's going to tell me she understands what's best for me. Zora Mamdani, a rich kid, is going to tell me, hey, was that gas a little too much this morning? Your groceries a little too expensive? Socialism's the answer, Zoran. You know, I'm not eating the top tier steak now, but my gosh, when socialism moves in, I'll be lucky to have any type of steak, right? But I would love for these. You ever see a Pitbull? Pitbull, the rapper. He's talked about it. He's talked about what it's like fleeing that type of government. It falls on deaf ears. No one wants to listen to the experts. They want to listen to Mamdani and Bernie Sanders. The only thing Bernie Sanders has expertise on is how to blame the oligarchy for 40 years while being in the oligarchy, while being an established... The guy has built three houses with taxpayer money. It's the biggest grift of all time, Bernie Sanders. But it's so funny to see the socialism movement. And it's, I'm not saying it's all rich white people. Obviously, there are people from all, you know, all walks of life who have fallen into this. But if you look at the majority, go back and look at those New York City mayoral election for Zora Mamdani, this democratic socialist move, which is just socialism, right? They think if we call it something different, it's socialism. It is supported, it is pushed by rich white college-educated people. And a lot of them say, hey, this, look what we can do for you. I don't think they realize in socialism that you're begging for, you're not going to live the lavish life you're living now. I know you hate Elon Musk, but they'll target you too, rich white college-educated person. You'll be targeted as well. It's everyone, anyone who has a little bit of extra, you'll be targeted. But it's so interesting to see, and the New York Post had the story today, that 7%, that's who dictated, and again, you have no one to blame except for the people who didn't go out and vote, for the moderate Democrats who are complaining about where their party is today. I mean, number one, you didn't see the writing on the wall. You didn't see this coming. You know, yesterday I compared it to the Tea Party movement, but this has been brewing a lot longer than the Tea Party movement was. You didn't see this coming with AOC, and now with Zora Mamdani. Finally, you're realizing, and what happened on election night. But 7% of registered voters decided that socialism was the way to go. And again, mostly white, college-educated people who went and voted for these three socialist lunatics, I guess is what you can say. I'm sorry, 17%. I said 7. That's fake news. 17% of voters, fueled by young and white New Yorkers, led Mamdani's socialist election surge. This is from the New York Post. It says just 7%. Okay, see, I was right the first time. The New York Post has the most. Is it 7 or 17? Just 7% of active voters supported Mayor Zora Mamdani's radical ally, Denlaza Avila, over establishment representative in Tuesday's main primary event. The overall turnout, roughly only 17% of Democratic voters in New York City showed up to vote, where you had Goldman lose, you had Weird Al win in her primary, and you listen to these people talk. You listen to these people talk over on... over on MSNBC, I'm sorry, MS Now, you had one of these people on. And of course, MS Now is not going to call out anybody. But over on MS Now, they did have one of the candidates who won on. And listen to her not answer this question, asking if she's a communist. The host there says, and it was not Chris Hayes, it was the other guy, asks this chevalier, how do you respond to allegations that you're a communist? And listen to this word salad answer. Is Is Kamala Harris putting this campaign together? Listen to this.
Delegation, and you're going to appear in all sorts of people's ads, all sorts of Republicans' ads to say, this is what you're going to get if you vote for the Democrats, a communist.
You know, I think that is, that framing is one that I've been very proud to be able to say I don't respond to, one in which I have been very intentional to say I won't be reactive. We are presenting a vision of what we're fighting for. And I think for far too long, we have had politics that is reactive to what Republicans are doing. What we need is Democrats who are actually going to present a positive vision, one that sets the tone for what we should be talking about, which is the issue of affordability, which is the issue of how our budgets are moral documents. If we say that we want to invest in working people in this country, then we need to do that, and our budgets need to reflect that. If we say that we value immigration and immigration justice, we need to make sure that that is also reflective in our policy. And so I'm very proud of a campaign that we built that centers those ideals, that centers those values and that vision for what we need as a community. And that's how I'll continue to move forward in Congress. And I think that for far too long, this reactive conversation of what we should be afraid of has prevented us from being able to have a politics of hope and a politics.
Does an answer like that happen anywhere else but MS Now? You ever just flip on MS Now because you're like, you know what? My blood pressure is a little too low. I think I'm going to ramp it up. Now this is the same woman who said she wants to abolish police and prisons. Remember we were told you're crazy when you say Democrats want to close all prisons? I guess we weren't that crazy because now that is an active campaign message for a Democratic nominee in New York City for Congress. Now, the reason I bring this all up was obviously to bring it back here. That's what I always do. To bring it back here to Western New York, okay? Because primary night, we are still reeling. Well, not me. I'm not reeling. I'm enjoying watching this from afar, right? I'm enjoying watching this from afar. But The Zellner fallout. And by the way, I asked multiple Democrats to come on Hardline Sunday to talk about the fallout. One person said yes. And that's Councilmember Mitch Nowakowski. And we appreciate Mitch being transparent and coming on Sunday to talk about it. No one else wanted to talk about it. The county executive didn't want to talk about it. Obviously, Jeremy Zellner, no one can get a hold of him. Not even his friends over at the Investigative Post. I asked multiple Democrats. No one wants to talk about it. Wants to talk about the fallout from Tuesday and what should happen to Jeremy Zellner. Now, do I think there is a socialist push in Western New York? Maybe. Maybe the party locally is moving more to the left. I do think the pushback to Zellner is more just what he was trying to do. And this is why I started the show the way I did. See, everything comes back together. When I said I don't understand people who want more government, they're not listening to other people. They're not listening to experts. They're not listening to people who fled communist socialist countries. Did no one in the Democratic Party, was everyone afraid to talk to Jeremy Zellner and say, hey, Jer, this isn't a good look? Not one person. I'm not saying, you know, polling cards has no idea what's going on, but not one person in the Erie County Democrats, no one on the committee, no one in the party, none of his friends, no one wanted to say, Jared, this is a really bad look. Maybe you should drop the chair or not run for Congress. Like, no one was talking to him about that. See, I don't understand that. People tell me what I'm screwing up all the time. All the time I'm told, hey, don't do this. Joe, your show sucked today. I hear that on a regular basis. No one walked up to Jeremy Zellner, no one in the party, and said, Jeremy, this is a really dumb thing to do. And now we're finding out all the party resources that he had access to, because he is the chairman, that he put into his campaign. Now, we also compared this to a 2008 primary where there was a three-way race. This is where Joe Macy was running. And if you adjust the numbers for inflation, they didn't even spend a quarter of what these two candidates did for Tuesday's primary. So the money spent, if I'm a Democrat, if I'm on the committee, I am disgusted in the money that was put to Zellner's campaign. I mean, if I'm a Democrat, I'm disgusted at how Buffalo, the city of Buffalo politics changed just because Zellner wanted a seat in Albany. But now there's pressure, and you know, I called this on Tuesday night. It was my final question to Jack O'Donnell and my final question to Carl Calabrese. Can Jeremy Zellner stay in that position? I know technically he can. I'm not saying there's a law or a rule, but is there not going to be immense pressure on Jeremy Zellner to step down? And we're starting to see Joe may have been right. Jack O'Donnell was on Channel 4 yesterday. He was on with Susan and Brian today. And both times he said, yeah, there's rumbles. There's rumbles in the Democratic Party that Jeremy Zellner might be feeling the pressure to step down. To step down and move on. He took a big risk. You take risks in life. He took a big risk. And I don't think he'll be able, number one, to regain control of the party. But now I think what's coming out and the money he spent on this campaign on himself, and when people reflect and look back to last year and the mess of a primary in the city of Buffalo that was orchestrated all so Jeremy Zellner could be in Senate, I think Democrats are going to be disgusted with the way this broke down and all that happened. A lot was riding on this election, and now I think people can be more vocal about how they really feel about the shenanigans that have happened over the last year, all because Jeremy Zellner wanted to be in Albany. 803-0930, star 930. Would love to hear your thoughts on this as we learn more. Also, I'm hearing that Main Street East, as it goes over the 290, here, this is a text from a listener. Tell people to avoid Main Street East as it goes over 290 and do not get off the 290 on Main Street East. It's backed up. That's what I've been told. I said, this is my mother. I need to be at a place where I can see what is holding it up, but I've been sitting here for 10 minutes, have it moved. So that's Main Street East, you know, in Amherst, where it goes over the 290. We'll get an eye on that and get you more information. 803-0930, star 930. Should Jeremy Zellner resign as chair of the Erie County Democrats? Democrats out there, I know you listen. Do you know how many times people walk up to me and say, Joe, you know, I'm a Democrat. I disagree with you most of the time, but I still really appreciate your show. Okay, well, now's your time to call in. 803-0930, star 930. You can now be vocal about how you really feel about the shenanigans. And by the way, you don't have to be from Buffalo to be upset about the shenanigans your party pulled in the city of Buffalo all for Jeremy Zellner. You can be in Amherst, Orchard Park, Clarence, Lancaster, and be a Democrat and now be vocal about how upset you are, the shenanigans your party, the money. Think about it. Not just the money in this race, the money your party threw in to the Sean Ryan campaign. That's no offense to Sean Ryan, but it was all because Zellner wanted to be in state Senate and he doesn't even get the payoff of 1 year. 803-0930, star 930. We're getting some more texts about that stop on Main Street. So if you can avoid Main Street by the 290 in Amherst, you would be wise to do so on WBEN. It's Joe Beamer on News Radio 930 WBEN. By the way, yeah, Main Street at the 290 in Amherst. If you're coming from Kensington, it's like Kensington to North Forest. If you could avoid that section of Main Street in Amherst, I would do so. And also that backup is now going back onto the 290 ramp. Now, if you know that ramp, it's a pretty long ramp, but don't get off there. If you're traveling on the 290, I would get off at Kensington, or I would get off, you know, I would take the 290 to the 90 to the 33 and go to Union. I know that sounds crazy, but from the texts we're getting, people are waiting on Main Street 10 to 20 minutes. And again, this backup starts at Kensington to North Forest. We're being told it's utility work on Main from Forest through Union. So we'll keep our eyes on that. And if you can avoid that area, it would be wise to do so. 803-0930, star 930. Should Jeremy Zellner resign as chair of the Erie County Democratic Party? Paul in Shelby. Paul, thanks for hanging on.
Hey, Joe, how you doing today, buddy?
Doing all right, man.
Hey, first off, I'm glad he lost. I'm not a Democrat, same as you're not. You know that. I've talked to you 1,000 times.
Ken, is this a situation where...
Okay. But I'm glad he lost. But do you realize the reason he lost?
Well, I think it's a mix, Paul. I think it's a mix. I think some people were upset about the chair thing, and I think another is Rivera's more to the left.
Nope. My theory, the reason he lost, and think about it, every ad he ran, and so many of them on TV, I'm not even going to say the two words that he called Trump, okay? You know what they are, and I know what they
yes.
are.
Yes. Oh, yes, right? Yes. Yep.
First off, you don't bash the president like that. Second off, every ad had his children in there, and he's teaching them to bash the president, fight Trump, and I'm going to do everything against Trump. What kind of message is that sending to the kids? You know?
Yeah, and by the way, Paul, and he wasn't running against Trump. I mean, the whole thing sounded like he was running a national campaign
trying to go to
Albany. Yeah, no, from the first commercial, from the first, the pancake commercial, it was Trump, Trump, yep. Trump. He didn't talk about Rivera until a week before the primary.
Yep, yep. And now he's saying Rivera ran a dirty campaign. Rivera did what he needed to do, but he didn't run a dirty campaign. Okay, plain and simple. You know, instead of eating so much, he ought to think a little. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that?
I thought, and Paul, this is where I could see that obviously their polling was saying something, because he did start focusing on Rivera, and he was posting on social media every hour videos with his elected Democrats telling people to go vote for him. But yeah, he didn't focus on Zellner, and he was running against Trump. I hate to break the news to Jeremy Zellner. I don't think he's ever going to be in a position to run a campaign against Trump again.
Nope, I agree with you. And you know what? And I haven't been in Erie County in 26, 27 years, but I watch what goes on, and I'm glad he's out. I think he's one of the lowest Democrats there are, okay, plain and simple. And I hope the party just gets him out, period. He was just disrespectful to the president and all the children in Western New York watching those ads.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And he didn't put Erie County first. He didn't put the community first. No. He put the party first. That's most Democrats in Western New York. They put the party correct above anything else. And no, Paul, as someone who, you know, regularly tries to get him to come on the show and talk about the party, we'll see if he resigns, but yeah, I'm excited to see maybe a change at top of the Democrat party.
I hope this leads to polling cards. Another one. I'm not even going to bring it up, but I hope this leads into people realizing Hochul needs to be out of here. And all we can do is keep telling everybody to vote red, to get her out.
Yeah.
Because this is just going to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, but Paul, let me get your thoughts on that. And I know you don't live in the district, but the Zellner district that's now going to Rivera, you know, you have a gubernatorial candidate. You're running Bruce Blakeman. For the local Republican Party to not run someone in that district, I think that's such a huge loss, because there will be Republicans who say, well, Blakeman's not going to win, so I'm not going to go and just vote for that. I think that's a huge miss by the Republicans.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. But I'll tell you the same thing Carl Calabrese says to you every time. The GOP, they're lagging behind. What is wrong? Somebody needs to light a fire under their butt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's been the case for as long as I can remember, Paul.
Exactly. And I'm older than you. I'm twice your age, buddy. So, I'm going on. And you know what? And ignore the people that tell you you're doing a bad job and you're over and over with different topics. I think you're doing a great job. And you are, between Bowerly, Bellevue, and you, the whole radio station's got it wrapped up.
Well,
okay? Plain and simple.
We appreciate it, Paul. Thank you so much. Paul in Shelby. Yeah, I think that was one of Zellner's. And by the way, can I say, I accidentally pressed an audio cut when Paul was talking. That was not Rob, so please don't blame Rob. He's doing a great job. That was 100% me. I had clips queued up for something else I was going to talk about, and I accidentally nudged the space bar. So that's That's on me. I take the blame for that. Rob, he cut it as soon as he heard it. And Rob, thank you for that. 803-0930, star 930. Jeremy Zellner, should he be pressured to resign by the Erie County Democrats? You know, and again, it's not about me. I don't, it's what it is. But I mean, this is a guy who blocked my X feed from the Erie County Democrats Twitter page. I mean, again, you can think I'm, you can disagree with what I say. You can think I'm wrong on everything. I do host a show that is open to, I mean, all my shows. You want to come on here, but I actively try to get two Democrats every week on Hardline to make it, you know, half Republican, half Democrat, and I'm blocked by the party's page. I think Jeremy Zellner is very divisive. I mean, I think Mark Poloncarz is very divisive. I think new leadership, now again, new leadership could go the way of Mamdani. So I'm not saying that, you know, who knows with the way the Democratic Party's going, but the what I'm hoping for is maybe someone who's not so divisive, and I think Jeremy Zellner is because he's still the chair. I think he's a very divisive figure in local politics, just as Mark Poloncarz is very divisive. Everything is they're awful people, we're perfect, and if you listen to me, I will never say Republicans are perfect or Democrats are all awful. But it's very black and white with Zellner and Poloncarz. And I think that mindset, again, blocking a local radio show host. And I didn't even tweet anything at the Erie County Democrats. Now, I did tweet something at Zellner when he said, I'm excited to see Bill Clinton at the convention tonight. And I responded with a meme of him saying I did not have sexual relations with that woman. So maybe that's why he blocked me on his personal page. But I never said anything to the Erie County Democrats, and they blocked me. And I think that's petty. I think that's like Poloncarz not tagging Chris Scanlon in a groundbreaking ceremony during the primary because he was endorsing Sean Ryan. I have one more thing to say about Poloncarz in this election, but Dwayne's in East Amherst, and I don't want to keep Dwayne waiting. Dwayne,
I don't belong to an organized party. I'm a Democrat.
Yeah, with your expertise, how are you breaking this down?
Okay, I'm breaking it down. Well, I'm a former county employee for my whole career, and I worked part-time also, like you. I always, you know, was chasing the buck. But, election night, Mr. Zellner failed. Not only did he not acknowledge John Rivera, he never congratulated him. And it was just really awful. I mean, just a bad look. You talk about, you know, I mean, Collins did the same thing when Poloncarz beat him. Remember? I don't know if you remember that.
No. Explain that.
Yeah, Poloncarz beat Collins, Collins was a really sore loser. He never acknowledged him. He never conceded. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't think I ever once saw or heard in his speech the chair here ever congratulate Mr. Rivera. And he won handily, 55-45.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I always said I thought Collins and Poloncarz had very similar personalities.
I'll invoke my Fifth Amendment privilege on that. The county executive has good hair. I wish I had his hair. He's got nice hair. But, Joe, you know, I give Mitch credit. At least he's got the intestinal fortitude to come forward. You know, this whole thing stinks, okay? I mean, this is Boss Tweed, Tammany Hall personified, I mean, on steroids. You remember the New York City political machine from your high school days and when you weren't in the in-school suspension room. I'm only kidding you.
That was only 3 days, Dwayne.
No, seriously. There's, you know, a lot of money was donated to the Democratic Committee, and they could never account for it. And, of course, you know, that's not going to go anywhere because they own the judges. I mean, you know, you you vote for three, and three are running, okay? You know, and sadly, you know how politics works around here. Jeremy Zellner, Henry Wojtasek, and Nick Langworthy, they get in the room, and I know you're having Nick on, but they all horse trade. And that, why are they not running somebody in this district?
Yeah.
The gentleman, I forget his name, he ran in the primary, in the special election.
Dan Gagliardo.
Yeah, real nice fellow. And he ran, and you know, he tried, and he ran for what else? He ran for Amherst supervisor.
Yep.
Here in Ithaca, New York. I mean, excuse me, Amherst. There's no room for dissension here. They run roughshod. I had a good friend of mine. He was one of our county attorneys, and his mother died, and he promised her that he'd run for judge, family court judge, and they forced him out. They were going to fire him. They forced him to retire. Okay, just heavy-handedness. You don't have this isn't the Democratic Party of Joe Crangel, where we had. You know, and what they did to Chris Scanlon was despicable. I'm sorry.
Yes.
You
know, that was
just so wrong. I mean, here's a loyal. Here you got a Democrat incumbent. You know, he's the sitting mayor. And what do they do? They defecate on him. I'm sorry. That's just so wrong. It's totally wrong.
But then Dwayne Scanlon turns around and endorses Zellner. I'll never understand that. That's to me. That's really disappointing.
Well, they're all afraid of him.
Yeah,
that's the problem. And I tell you, I give, you know, John Rivera, he's a decent person. I don't know if you know him or not, ever met him, but he's actually a decent guy, you know, and they went after his father too. You know, they, David is the Niagara District Councilman. I mean, politics is a blood sport. You know that it's, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to accuse their opponent of bestiality for goodness sakes. You know, I mean, it's a dirty, filthy game. And unfortunately, you know, people are afraid. I mean, I tell you, I give and look at, you know, the fellow, what's his name, Bojack, the one in the assembly seat.
Adam Bojack, yeah.
Yeah, well, he's running against Hulk, who, and she's another deputy commissioner, I think, of highways or something. They're all, you know, none of them. He's gonna continue running the party. He controls the executive committee. He controls, you know, the committee. No one's going to tell them the emperor is naked. Okay, that's.
You don't think there will be pressure?
Nah, not significant pressure. Not
wow.
Enough to,
okay.
And that's my opinion. And you know what we have. I'll tell you, I give, you know, these Democrats, I'm not a Democratic socialist, I'm a Democrat, I'm got a little more conservative as I got older, but yeah, I'm still, I can understand, you know, some of what they're saying, you know, they were well organized, people are upset, all the Democratic socialists are taking them. I think it was more, people were just sick. I mean, Joe, I got 4 or 5 mailers a week from the chair, okay? And come on, you know, it's just, now people were, people, you know, the other side had a chance to get out too. You see, only 17% turned out in New York City. Well, where's the other 83% sitting on their posterior? Okay, I mean, you got to give some of these young people some credit. I don't agree with their, you know, whole, you know, Santa, you know, give everything to us. Socialism is great, but hey, they're organized. They're working. They're not sitting on their rear. Okay, and it was, you know, the people always get it right, Joe. People always get it right, and people can urinate and moan all day, but it's not going to change the result. Those that went out and voted, I remember when Byron Brown, he lost that primary to India Walton.
Yep.
And, oh, and the Jeremy Zellner and Mark Poincaré, they were yucking it up, laughing. They were having a great time. Well, be careful what you wish for, okay? I mean, that's, you know, what's fair is fair. I don't wish any ill will to Mr. Zellner or Mr. Poincaré, but, you know, how about having a fair party? How about having fairness and you know, not running this like you know, like Tammany Hall? We work best as a country when people work together. You know, when we had Moynihan, he was a very intelligent fellow, okay, the Democrat, liberal, and we had Jacob Javits, the Republican, but we worked together. That's what we need to do. Kevin Hardwick is a perfect example. There's a smart guy. I told you, I was on his show. He's a very intelligent, he's his own person. He's not a little sorority girl, if you will, okay? And, of course, he's, you know, he'll be punished too, I'm sure. You know?
Well, I actually, you know, and by the way, of course, I know Kevin Smart because he's the one who said Joe should follow and be in host Hardline. So, obviously, we know Kevin very, very smart. I think Kevin might be the winner, though, because obviously, Poincaré and Zellner put their support behind Lisa Shimera. They haven't officially, but it's obvious that's what they're doing. And after last night, it looks like their opinion, their endorsement doesn't mean anything. I think Kevin might be the winner when it comes to next year's county executive race.
He's a decent person. He's got a good moral compass. He's smart. I don't think he can be bought by anybody. He's and as a Democrat, he's got my vote in the primary. I'll tell you that right now, hands down. He's the real deal. He's a real man. He's a man's man, if you will. And yeah, that's about all I have to offer. You wanted a Democrat to call. Dwayne, I'm not afraid. You know, like I said,
I always appreciate when you call in, Dwayne. I always appreciate your expertise and your knowledge on all this, and look forward to talking with you again. Dwayne in East Amherst, 803-0930, star 930. We'll wrap this topic up. If you have anything you want to say about Zellner and his position as chair, do you think he should resign? Would love to hear from you, Republicans and Democrats, but obviously Democrats, it's your party. Would love to hear how you feel about that. When we come back, I'm going to remind you of what Poloncarz said about Chris Scanlon when he lost his primary, and why we don't have that condescending message to Jeremy Zellner after Zellner loses his primary. And then I saw something on my way to work today that made me want to know, can you tell me about the worst job you've ever worked? I'll explain when we come back. It's Joe Beamer. Joe Beamer at his most favorite job he's ever worked on News Radio 930 WBEN. Hey, hour number two here on The Voice of Buffalo, News Radio 930 WBEN. Great to be with you. And it looks like maybe the rain has stopped a little bit. Man, that I'll tell you. I hate, you know, after Christmas, I am not a fan of winter, right? I'm glad we have it. I'm glad there are people who partake in winter sports and all that stuff. Don't get me wrong. But I will say, walking in the snow is better than a torrential downpour. I mean, walking from my parking spot into the gym today, it was just miserable. Absolutely miserable. I will take a little bit of snow over rain. Maybe I'm in the minority there. Again, I summer is my favorite season. I love summer. I hate the rain. I hate being stuck out in the rain. All right, we're talking about the continued fallout from Tuesday here in Western New York and nationwide. And as you know, Jeremy Zellner lost. He had all the endorsements. Kathy Hochul, Mark Poloncarz, Sean Lavin. Who else? John Flynn. Just any elected official endorsed Jeremy Zellner. Here's the, no, that's not the video. Never mind. We're not going to play that video. So the county executive who endorsed Jeremy Zellner has not commented on it. We couldn't get a comment from the county executive, from Jeremy Zellner. Now, Sean Ryan didn't endorse anyone. I haven't heard a comment from Sean Ryan either. But if you remember a year ago, because I know people are going to say, Joe, get off this. I am so focused in on the landscape of Buffalo politics was literally shuffled around all for Jeremy Zellner. This is, I won't get over this quickly. This was something we'll definitely talk about with Nowakowski on Sunday. This is going to take me a while to get over. They literally reshuffled, held a primary to oust a Democrat incumbent so Jeremy Zellner could be in Albany. I mean, seriously, if you keep saying that to yourself, how disgusting is that? How disgusting is that? And then you lose, and we find out, I mean, $2.1 million? You know, if I'm Karen Hoke, I'm like, hey, I was the endorsed Democrat. Were you focusing it all on my campaign? I lost by 16 points. But if you look at the city of Buffalo, anyway, last year, the primary. Now remember, Mark Poloncarz, the county executive, wouldn't tag Chris Scanlon in pictures of groundbreaking ceremonies because he's a child, but also because he was not endorsing him, so he didn't recognize that the mayor of Buffalo was there. I mean, and this goes back, right? The county executive, obviously not the most mature person. He had a screaming match on national television with Byron Brown during the blizzard in 2022. So we're not talking about Mr. Maturity. But he puts this statement out last year. This is a year ago, almost to the day, a year ago. I commend Acting Mayor Scanlon for his decision to help unite the Democratic Party after Tuesday's results. As a party, we need to come together to defeat a self-funding MAGA Republican who would take our city backwards. Again, this is the city of Buffalo mayor. The city of Buffalo that's been in decline long before Trump went down the escalator. I continue. Chris should be commended for his efforts in City Hall, both as acting mayor and as South Councilman, and his leadership has helped move Buffalo forward. Chris has a bright future in the Democratic Party and government, and I look forward to continuing to work with him. What a condescending statement. I mean, the face of condescension. Just a condescending statement to Chris Scanlon. This is after he accused Chris Scanlon of being connected to MAGA, which, you know, in the Democratic Party, there's almost no worse accusation. This is after not tagging him in posts, talking about how awful he is. Anyway, he puts this condescending statement out after the primary. Where's the statement for Jeremy Zellner? Is Jeremy Zellner uniting the Democratic Party? Does Jeremy Zellner have a bright future in government? Where's the condescending statement for Zellner? And that's why, like, I continue, and, you know, I don't want to pick on Chris Scanlon too much. I wish he'd come on the show and we could talk about this. But, like, that's, I just, after all this, to be able to, like, shake Poloncarz's hand and endorse Zellner, I don't know how you do it. I really don't. Like, I'm the immature one. I don't know. But my gosh, I would try everything I could to just flip this party upside down after what they did, if I was Chris Scanlon, after what they did to me. But nothing. We have crickets from Poloncarz, crickets from Hochul, crickets from Zellner. Is Jeremy Zellner going to go out there now and campaign for Rivera? Is he going to do his job? And if you're John Rivera, you just beat the chair of the Democratic Party. Do you expect the party to put their full endorsement? Well, I guess they don't have to. You're not running against anyone because the Republican Party decided not to put a candidate up. I just don't know how you continue to go back there and run this party that rejected you. And again, I this is a question I'm gonna have for Mitch Nowakowski. No one in the party said, "Hey, Jeremy," like pull Jeremy Zellner aside. "Hey, man, this is a really bad look." No one thought that. Poloncarz didn't think that. Hochul didn't say something. No one pulled this guy aside. John Flynn. I think John Flynn's a smart guy. He didn't pull Zellner aside and go, "Jeremy, this is a bad look. You might want to resign his chair." Sean Lavin. Again, Sean Lavin seems like a nice enough guy, a smart guy. Lavin didn't say, "You know, Jeremy, this was, I don't know if I want to put my name on this. You know what? I don't know if I want to do this video after all." That's what I would say. Like, if, "Hey, I'm going to come to town hall and film a video with you. Eh, I don't know if I want to be associated with this, with these shenanigans." But again, my hope, more than my hope that Jeremy Zellner's time as chair is coming to an end, my hope is that Democrats now, local Democrats, now feel comfortable, and it seems like they do, to call out the shenanigans of a year ago. And I'm hoping that Democrats locally call out all the shenanigans, talk about the forum, talk about, you know, ousting an incumbent just to open a seat for Zellner. I'm hoping we get that. Now that Zellner's not a threat, I'm hoping we get that transparency from some elected Democrats more than just Joe Golombek. I love Joe Golombek. No offense to Joe. But we need more Democrats calling out the shenanigans from a year ago that all set Tuesday up. Tuesday would not happen without last year's shenanigans in the city of Buffalo mayoral primary. Let's go to John on Grand Island. Hey, John.
Hey, Joe. So I just wanted to say, like, the mail-outs, like, you're saying it was $2.1 million that they spent for Jeremy Zellner?
No, I believe the $2.1 million was the combined, but Zellner out was three-fourths of that.
Yeah, and the mail-outs for everything for Sean Ryan and Jeremy Zellner, those mail-outs were glossy, they're huge, they're like in your face, and, you know, those things are expensive. I mean, just think about it like a postcard, you know, just a basic postcard, you know, is like 50 cents the dollar to buy a nice postcard to send to somebody, let alone those big mail-outs. And then everyone got them. Like, even if you weren't even in the district, you got them. So.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, and that was a crazy thing last year with the Ryan primary, that there were people in his Senate district getting his Ryan for mayor.
Yeah,
Ryan for mayor thing. Yeah, exactly. By the way, John, just to be clear, Zellner himself spent $1.3 million, and Rivera was under $500,000.
That's amazing. That, like, really, like, surprises me. And I'm not a big I didn't vote. They're in my district. I'm on Grand Island. And I didn't vote because I didn't care for either one of them, and I just wanted to see what happened. And I'm so amazed and surprised that it happened like this. And good for John Rivera. You know, he seems like a nice guy. But at the same time, I want to bring back this about Byron Brown. Byron Brown saw the writing on the wall with Indian Walton. You know, Indian Walton won that primary, what was that, two elections ago, correct?
Yes, yeah, yep.
She won the primary, and everyone did not want to see a socialist as a as a mayor. And so they did a write-in. That was a write-in, and that was mostly South Buffalo people that, like, made sure that the Indian Walton did not become the mayor of Buffalo. So that's pretty amazing to see how the socialist agenda is transforming across New York State. And Kathy Hochul is not doing anything to prevent it, and she's from Hamburg, of course, we all know that, and it's going to happen. It's going to happen, and the Republican Party is not doing anything about it.
No, you know, it's so funny to bring that up, John, because if that was today, if Byron Brown was running for mayor and he lost to socialist India Walton, I don't think he would have been able to have a successful writing campaign.
No, not today. No. You're absolutely right. And with that being said, he saw the writing on the wall, and he stayed like he's not out of anything. He's still that Batavia Downs is an entity of New York State.
Oh yeah, he doubled his pension. He doubled his pension by going to the Batavia Downs.
Yeah, and so he did that. And I know Chris Scanlon, and I've done some work for him. And I'm so surprised that he's not even piping up to say anything. I'm so kind of annoyed by it, but at the same time, I know how that Democratic Party is because I grew up in South Buffalo, my Jimmy Griffin days, and I know exactly how that runs.
Yeah, no, I always say, like, it shocks me. It does shock me how he so quickly put his support with Zellner. But hey, he's got a family, he's got to feed. He doesn't want to be without a job. I get it. I understand.
Yeah, it's very interesting to watch, isn't it?
It is. It is. Because they'll say one thing about Trump. They'll always talk about how, well, you know, Trump won't let anyone in his administration speak out against him. And, you know, maybe there's some truth to that. But it's the same for the Democratic Party. If you say one thing bad about Zellner, I mean, look, they'll send everyone after you. And if you're John Rivera, you'll still win. But, you know, it's very intimidating. These party politics, very intimidating.
Remember the soap opera at nighttime called Dallas?
I've heard of it, yes.
The late 70s, early 80s. this is like Dallas. You have to do a little research on that, but it's very interesting how the manipulation of the entities work with and without and against each other. Yep. It's a soap opera, and politics. I love them because it is a soap opera.
It is a soap opera. But I mean, not only is it like a soap opera with your day to day drama, but you know, a lot of people involved have 6 or 7 marriages. So it really is like a soap opera.
Yeah.
Hey, John, appreciate the call, John, on Grand Island. You know, and I mean, some are like Victor, where they get married, divorce, and they, you know, 8 wives later, okay, you know what, Nikki? Maybe we should be married all along. And they get married again. Is Victor still married to Nikki? It's been a while since I watched The Young and the Restless. Great show. It's one of those things where you start watching, you're like, this is entertaining. But then, you know, life gets in the way and you fall like a week behind. You're like, yeah, as John said, I'm following the soap opera that's politics. I'm also following the soap opera that's the New York Mets. I don't know if I need any more scripted drama. I don't know if I need to add the scripted drama to the real life drama going on. All right, when we come back, when I was driving into work today, it was pouring rain, and I saw people working outside. You got your garbage men. You have people doing landscaping. Only so much you can do in the rain, but they were out there. You've got construction crews. You've got roofers. What is the worst job you've ever worked? And by worst, I mean, it could just be like an awful job. Like you worked for an awful boss, or you worked in an awful, you know, cubicle and that's just not your thing. Or like just a physically demanding job. You know, I can't compare to the physically demanding job. I have a few examples, but nothing like what some of you guys and ladies have done. And I want to hear the worst job. And like I said, it was just for like an awful company, an awful boss, an awful office setting, or it was physically demanding every day, sweating your behind off. What's the worst job you ever worked? 803-0930, star 930. It's Beamer on a Thursday on The Voice of Buffalo, News Radio 930 WBEN. Final segment, Joe Beamer on News Radio 930 WBEN, 803-0930, star 930. So on my way into work, pouring rain, right? And, you know, here I am complaining about the walk into and out of the gym. There's people working in the grass, in the yards, people's yards. They're working on the streets. I mean, you've got, and that didn't sound right, working construction on the streets. They're working the streets in the rain. Well, that's a different topic for a different day. But, you know, working in the rain, I'm like, oh my gosh. I know I sound, people are going to judge me off the way I sound, but you know, it's not easy working in the rain. I mean, from doing construction in the rain to delivering in the rain. Believe me, the second job, I'm delivering in the rain a lot, okay? Delivering people's packages to their front door in the pouring rain. That's not fun. But it made me think, what's the worst job you ever had? You know, back in the day, I used to listen to Opie and Anthony. Anthony Cumia, who was on this show on National Radio Day last year, Anthony Cumia would always talk about his days working in the air conditioning industry and, you know, having to bring the thing all the way to people's attics and, you know, you're in a cramped space, it's hot because no one in the winter thinks they want air conditioning. They wait till it's, you know, the middle of summer to get central air put in. And you know, I just remember him telling those stories. And there's a comedian, Jim Florentine. I remember listening to him talk about, you know, working construction, working, you know, on the site in the summer, and just like the hell these jobs sound like. I mean, obviously, it's what people need to do. And we're lucky to have people that, you know, want to work in these industries. But I just think of like, man, what hell some days must be. But then you have people that work office jobs, but, you know, they work an office job where they don't get along with anybody, right? And if you're not getting along with anybody, that might be more on you. Or you have a coworker, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, that is just doom and gloom and, you know, brings you down every day. Or maybe, you know, you had someone buys out your company and you don't like the new management, right? So it could go for office jobs too. Now, I will tell you, for me, and I always bring this up, I loved the people I worked with. But, you know, retail just wasn't for me. I have a huge respect for people who work retail. But for two of the years I was in retail, I did overnight. Now, the store wasn't open overnight. I did overnight. And, you know, part of that was stocking the shelves. Other parts were, you know, we did 2 weeks completely redoing the Transit Road location, okay? And I'm talking about moving taking shelving apart, moving shelving, you know, putting rebar up, you know, a foot from the ceiling, you know, climbing up these ladders at like 3 a.m. And you know, reconstructing part of the store. Like, that for me was the most physical labor. Again, I like a good workout, but that was, and I'm thinking, these people do this every day. This is what people do every day. And look, I'm going up and down this ladder and I'm dripping sweat. Now, at the time, I was not in my best shape. We should probably point that out. But that was those overnight shifts, because a lot of them had nothing to do. You know, it was a little bit of stocking shelves, but it was mostly moving shelves and moving, you know, complete. If you remember Bed Bath & Beyond, they had that wall that you could put the little hooks on. Moving that or adding to that. I remember one night we had to completely rebuild the shelving in the back. And those are those heavy metal with, you know, wood top shelves. Oh, my gosh. So, again, I'm not saying I love the people I worked with. It has nothing to do with the people I worked with. But it was a very demanding job. And then, you know, the rest of the time there, when they moved me to days, I was working on the receiving dock. And what really started making that job just exhausting was I was on the receiving dock. But then I had to be part of the opening team. But then I had to be customer service. But then I had to be on the floor. And it was all this stuff as I'm also, I got to get to the back. I got to open this pallet. I got to move these pallets around. It was a physically demanding job. And God bless the people who do it. I have a ton of respect for people who do that every day. But it's one of those things, you ever just at a job and you say, it's just not for me. You ever have that job where you're sitting there? And again, you got to make money, right? We're not socialists yet. We're not socialists. You got to make money. You got to make a living. You got to put food on the table on the table for your family. But you ever just have a moment where you're like, this is not for me. This job is not for me. It's like what we talked about a few weeks ago with, you know, 53% of Americans hate their job. But by the time they're done with work, they are too physically exhausted to look for a job or put a resume together. But are you ever in that moment? Have you had that moment ever where you get home, you're sitting there? You know, when I worked daytime, so after I made, you know, what will probably go down as one of the worst decisions I ever made, when I left Bowerly Show and went and worked full-time at Bed Bath & Beyond, again, I'm very fortunate that I made it back in, but probably, you know, go back in time, I probably wouldn't leave Bowerly Show. Let's be honest. But when I left Bowerly Show and went full time in retail, again, I was working 7 to 5 Monday through Friday because I was the receiving guy. So I got to work a Monday through Friday schedule. That was nice. But I would get out at 5 and I would go home and take a nap before I could do anything. Like, it just took everything out of me. 10 hours, you know, talking with customers, stocking shelves, moving product, you know, breaking down the pallets, all that stuff, running the trash out. 10 hours, I would go home and take a nap before I did anything else. Like, my routine was usually wake up, go to work, take a nap, go to the gym, go to bed. Like, that was an average day during the week. I was just so exhausted. But again, I mean, I love the people I worked with. I worked with some really fun people. I just, that job, I dread. Like, I say this all the time. I dread that one of these days they're going to realize that I'm an awful talk show host and I'm going to get fired and I'm going to have to go back to retail. It's really the only other job I've ever done. I've done three things in my life. I've delivered food, I've worked retail, and I've been on the radio. That's it. Well, I delivered food and groceries and packages and stuff, but I've done delivery. Delivery, retail, radio. That's it. Those are the three things I've done. And I dread the day I walk off the air and they say, yeah, Joe, that was awful. You got to get out of here. And, you know, I'm going down to Consumer Square and seeing who wants me. 803-0930, star 930. Mark in Tonawanda. Hey, Mark.
Good afternoon, Joe. So many jobs to pick from.
Yes.
The very worst one I ever had, I worked nights one summer at J.H. Williams over on Vulcan Street on the drop forge making tools.
Making tools?
Yeah. That's, they actually supplied Sears with their tools because they had lifetime guarantee, because the tools that J.H. Williams made, they were all drop forge work, which is the best you could get, and a fully guaranteed. Well, let me tell you, you work like a dog in those places. Spent the whole night loading a furnace with ingots, put them all in, line them all up, watch until they get molten, start pulling them out, swing them over to the forgeman. He pounds them out with the drop forge, grab it back, put it on the side all night long. And those furnaces that you're reaching into, they got a little window that you reach in through. The first day I worked there, the drop forge guy takes a pop can, tosses it in, it evaporates. It is that hot in those furnaces. You spend the whole night reaching in and out with tongs, getting those ingots out. I'll tell you, you think you're in hell. That was the worst one I ever had.
Oh, my gosh. What kind of hours did you work, Mark?
I worked 11 to 7.
11 P to 7 A?
Yep. Ooh. And so, of course, you get home, you're buzzed, and it's hard to fall asleep when the sun comes up.
Yeah.
And then by the time you're really getting woozy and want to go to sleep, you got an hour or so before you got to get up and go into work.
Oh, you know, that's the one thing about overnights, Mark. You never feel awake. Because like you said, you get home, the world's moving, it's sunny outside, and you're trying to go to sleep. And it just, when I worked those 2 years overnight, I never felt like I was getting a full rest. Even I was sleeping 6-7 hours, but I just never felt like I was getting a full rest.
Well, you know, part of the problem is you're anticipating having to get up at an odd hour.
Yes.
To go to work.
Yeah.
Because your internal clock isn't scheduled for it. It takes a long time to acclimate to that. The other one that I had that was bad like that was I don't even know if they exist anymore either, a wire company. And we were on swing shift, but they did it in reverse so that you could get a 3 to 4 day weekend. Nothing is right. You cannot acclimate to any one of the three shifts. It just doesn't work. As my brother warned me, you don't eat, sleep, or poop right. Everything is out of cycle. You laugh, but I'll tell you, that was another rough summer.
So you had a 3 day weekend, but by the time the weekend came, you just slept the entire 3 days.
Well, pretty much.
Yeah.
You're just so out of schedule with everything. No, I ended up with a landscaping job, did that for the last 25 years. It could be miserable, but by your outdoors, you're in nature, none of these false locations.
Wow, Mark, you worked, you worked some real man jobs. You worked some real man jobs, Mark.
When I think back on it, you're right.
Wow.
Anyway.
That's all.
As you pointed out, you have to work.
Yep.
If you're going to support a family or even just yourself, you have to get out there and work.
You have to work. If you want to be able to enjoy any of your free time, you got to have a little bit of money. Mark and Tonawanda, wow. Appreciate the call. Yeah, Mark's right about that overtime, or about that overnight. So when I did overnights at Bed Bath, I didn't want to give up radio. So I was doing 10:30 to 7. 10:30 to 7. And then I would go home and take a 1 hour nap. I would come here. I would screen calls for Bowerly's show. I would go home and sleep 12 to 6. And then I would go run the Leslie Marshall show. I was Leslie's call screener at the same time I was Bowerly's call screener, run her show, and then I would go into work at 10:30. And then when Bowerly moved to the afternoons, I would do overnights till 7, sleep 7:30 to 2, do Bowerly's show 2:30 to 7, Leslie 7 to 10, back to work at 10:30. And then finally they moved my shift to 5 a.m. They're like, you know what? We need, you know, they were cutting hours, because I don't know if you know, they went out of business. So they were cutting hours. So then they were like, Joe, you're going to be 5-to-1, do a little bit of the overnight stuff, the stocking, and then you'll also be available for morning, you know, run with customers. And that was a little easier. So I would do, you know, 5-to-1, I go to the gym, and then I would do Bowerly's show, then Leslie's show, and then I go home and actually sleep a little bit. But yeah, overnight, it's tough. I mean, there are some people, you know, God bless the late Tom Conley. I mean, he had that down. He loved the overnights. He was here every night. But, you know, like I said, when I did overnights at Bed Bath & Beyond, or when I would fill in overnights here, you get home, and yeah, you'll go to sleep. But I even got the blackout curtains, those blackout curtains, so it felt like night. Something about it, and, you know, I think Mark might have touched on it. It's that anticipation of you have to get up at a weird hour. And one time I didn't get up. So this was when I was still in college. And I think the statute of limitations has worn out, so I don't think I can get let go for this. But I was just telling Rob this story before the show. We had a show on KB. Was Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry would talk to himself. That was the entire show. He would talk to himself. And automation wouldn't link up with it. So they had me come in 4 nights a week and someone else come in 3 nights a week. This is when I was still in college. So I'm making this money and going to college. It was great. But one night, I fell asleep, and I had a phone that was not taking the charge. It was an LG, well, like one of the early LG touchscreens, was not taking the charge. I thought it was plugged in. It was not. Slept through my alarm. Woke up at 1:45 in a panic. Sped to the station. Sped to the station. And again, God bless the late Tom Conley. He kept the station going. I came in here. I was so appreciative. Thank you so much, Tom. The next day, Tom loved M&Ms. I brought in some M&Ms for him. I go, Tom, anything else you want? I'm so, you know, because if I hadn't shown up for an overnight shift, I probably wouldn't be here today, right? I'm probably not here today doing this job. But that was the one time. So then that's in the back of your head, right? And that was college. Well, in the coming years, I work all these overnight shifts at Bed Bath & Beyond. And that, you know, like Mark said, that's in the back of your head. I got to get up at this weird hour. So even with the blackout curtains, I'm not really, you know, I'm not really getting to sleep because I've got this concern that that's going to happen again. On the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board, we're getting some great ones in here. And sorry if I can't get to all of them. One person says, worst job was telemarketing selling vitamins, a scam. Well, I needed a job after getting out of the USMC. After quitting the place, it was raided by the FBI. Wow, you got out just in time. Another person says on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board, I would have to say the worst job. Oh, now, you know, God bless the men and women that, go into school every day and teach our children, try to prepare them for the future. We've got some great teachers out there. You know, I've got some teachers in my family, Kyle in Amherst, who calls in all the time. You can just tell Kyle's a great teacher. Right? Now, do we have some teachers that try to put their political bend on everything? Yes. But anyone who volunteers their time with other people's kids, God bless you. This person says, I would have to say the worst job is teaching little spoiled, entitled, never taught a value of morals in their little lives while they're trying to boss you. That's on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board. Another one was probably the worst job I ever had was working at a company where I had to operate a plastics injection molding machine. It was a room filled with the, oh my gosh, this is the thing that goes, it would get very hot in order to melt the plastic so it can be injected into a mold to be formed into whatever part I happened to be making. In the summer, it would get between 120 to 135 degrees in the molding area. Jeez. Man. And I thought when the AC wasn't working last week in the studio, it was hot. But it wasn't 135. My gosh. Yeah, there are some really crappy jobs out there. Some really demanding jobs. And like I said, we are very fortunate that there are people that go into those jobs and do those jobs with perfection every day. You know, I am fortunate that I get to do a job that I love, and you know, and not to say there are people out there who work those physically demanding jobs that love their job. And again, God bless them. God bless them. But I think in our time, we've all had or will have worked a really crappy job, right? And a job that you tell stories about. I think in our lifetimes, most of us will have that one job we can point to. Oh, I forgot the old grocery store, Jubilee. They're out of business, I guess I can say. Jubilee wasn't an awful job, just the way that, you know, I got fired. It was the only job to this day, the only job that I've, up to now. Now, if I'm not here tomorrow, you know what happened. But up to now, the only job where I was fired and didn't quit was Jubilee. I worked there 6 months. And my drawer was short one day. I swear to God, I did not take any money out of the drawer. I must have given someone the wrong change. And it was short, and they let me go, which I can understand. You don't want money walking out. But I didn't take it, you know. And they have. And if this was today, you have the cameras over. They didn't have any cameras over the register. They do now. You would be able to see. I didn't take any money out. I just must have miscounted. So I wouldn't say it was a crappy job. It was just a crappy way to get let go. But like a week later, I went and applied at Lenovo and worked there for 14 years. So I guess it paid off in the end. That's the show for today. Thank you for the calls. Thank you for the texts. Thanks to everyone who reaches out on social media, emails me during the day. Really appreciate the information that is given, the interaction, and just appreciate you. As I continue to say, if it weren't for you, if it weren't for this audience, I would not have a job. So thanks to each and every one of you who listen, who interact with the show. And as you know, my goal every day is to make this show even better and to make this show a can't miss, you know. And thank you all who've helped out, and we'll continue. Like I said, I will always, you'll never be perfect, but I will always strive for perfection. So I'll always be working. Always be working. We're working on trying to make the show better. Thank you again, everybody. Don't touch that dial. Tom Bowerly is up next. Rob, thank you for a superb job on the other side of the glass. I'll talk with you tomorrow at 1 on WBEN.